Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in frigid St. Paul, Minnesota, coming to you Frogtown Radio, 94.1 FM, and wherever you get your podcasts. Minnesota seems to be the main character right now, and I'm Kevin Couchman, and I'm joined by the great Mari Sittner in New York. Wisely in New York. Mari, how are you?
I'm doing good. I don't know how wise it is. We're supposed to get 16 inches of snow on Sunday.
Okay.
But I lived in Minnesota, so I'm not scared.
But you're not getting 16 inches of the federal government right now.
There's that. Well,
but this is not problems. That. This is not that show. We're a theater, arts, and culture podcast. We're joined tonight by Brian James Polak. And Brian, how are you? You're a repeat offender here on Mouthing Off.
Yeah, second time. Happy to be back.
Happy to have you back. For people who don't know who you are, just give the 90-second Brian James Polak rundown.
Who are you?
What do you do? Yeah.
I'm a playwright. Over the years, I've written many different things, but I pretty much identify as a playwright and pretty much only aspire to write plays, although maybe there's one novel in my life. And I also am the host of a podcast called The Subtext that I've been doing for a little over 10 years now. Each month, I interview a playwright. Basically, and it's presented by that part. The Subtext is presented by American Theater Magazine.
Great. And you're not from the Twin Cities originally.
No, I grew up in New Hampshire. I'm a New Englander, but I've spent a lot of time around the country. I lived in Boston, lived in DC, LA, Chicago, Wisconsin, and now here. I've been here for about a year and a half.
Huh. Okay. And you're working on a project right now. So I'd love to cut to the chase. What is the thing you're working on? Where can people hear about it and all of that?
Right. So right now I'm in the midst of a workshop for a play that is called The Meeting. And I'm workshopping it with a local company called Melancholics Anonymous. And honestly, Melancholics Anonymous, when I saw the name, I didn't know much about them, but I was like, that's my kind of company. And the name of the company is really what got my attention. And I've been a fan of theirs ever since I found out about them. But we've been workshopping the play, and we workshop for another week. And on the 30th, January 30th, there'll be a presentation of the play at 7 p.m. at Black Forest Inn in Minneapolis.
All right. Where can people find the company? What's the URL?
Good question. Melancholics Anonymous. Google them. You'll find all their stuff.
Sure. Yeah. There aren't 10 companies called Melancholics Anonymous. It's like an acting warm-up.
Right. There's probably a support group, though, that they might be competing with.
Sure. Yeah, Billy Corgan is big in that support group. Yeah, fun. So and then tell us about this podcast as well, where you interview playwrights. How did that originate? You may have told us before, but it's a new episode, so want to
Sure,
hear about it.
yeah. Well, about, like I said, about it was 2015, and I was recently just out of grad school, and I was working for a theater in LA, and I was very sort of like dialed into the LA theater community. And LA used to have a sort of organizing body of the theater community called LA Stage Alliance, and they were launching a new online magazine, and they asked me if I would start a podcast. And I said, sure. I had never done such a thing before. I had zero skill set. And for a couple years, I would go to I'd go to a studio, and I'd sit down in a studio for an hour, and I'd interview a playwright. And then I left LA and moved to Chicago. And when that happened, the podcast kind of ended, and I very much missed it. And so a couple months later, I pitched it to American Theatre Magazine, and ever since January of 2018, the subtext has been part of American Theatre Magazine, and I've been interviewing a playwright a month ever since.
And for Philistines,
Sure.
including us, like tell people about American Theater Magazine. I mean, you must have a pretty deep relationship with that that
Yeah, so
publication.
American Theater is basically like the one main sort of national magazine for for theater in the United States. They're constantly putting out articles about directors and playwrights and actors, and sharing news of awards and hirings and firings. And op-eds about what's going on in the community, that sort of thing. And I
Yeah,
think
there's
they've been
not.
around for like 50, 60 years.
Yeah, it is the magazine of the American theater. There's not somebody out there who hasn't burned a bridge, who wouldn't say, ah, yes, I'd love to be featured in the, or to speak to American theater. So that's very cool. Are you the? And I'm not like trying to diminish it or whatever, but are you like the podcast? That's it.
Yeah, well, over the years, the reason I originally pitched the podcast to them was because I noticed they started to roll out some podcasts. They had one for a few years called Three on the Aisle that had three different theater critics who would gather every month, and they would talk about the shows that they had seen and that kind of thing. And so it was very theater critic oriented. And then they have a podcast that they call Off Script, which is kind of a catch-all. Like every episode could be an interview with an artistic director, or could be an actor or a scenic designer or a playwright. So they've had a few podcasts. There was one called Theater Mustang that they ran for a few years that was very specifically focused on theater artists who identified as trans and non-binary. And at the moment, the Subtext is the one podcast that's still going alongside their off-script podcast. Yeah, like
Oh, I see. Okay. Right.
I keep going. I'm like the
Listen,
Energizer Bunny.
how did you? This is fun because I have another podcast called Art of Darkness, and I'm going to invite you onto that. I want to have you on. I literally have the email going right now. And that's a podcast about the dark side of creativity. And we've covered different, we do biographical profiles of dead artists. And so we've covered dead playwrights. And I've learned as I've gone, right? I didn't go to
For
broadcasting
sure.
school.
For sure.
So,
Yeah.
what was your experience learning how to do radio, old timey radio?
Yeah, so
Yeah.
when I was doing it for those first couple of years in LA, it was like all I had to learn how to do was basically like interview a person, and I didn't even come in with that sort of like natural ability. And I was
I don't
really,
think.
yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, because I'm a terrible interviewer, but I mean, no, but really, but it's like I don't think anyone has the natural ability to do a proper interview. So yeah.
Yeah, and I really struggled. And I also, at the beginning, I was like, this is going to be easy. And I just rolled in, like, I scheduled the first, like, this, okay, we're recording the first episode. And I rolled in just sort of like, I'm going to like shoot from the hip. And I sat down with this playwright, and it was like silence, just like I just left a second of silence. Imagine that constantly with me going, so where were you born? And it was a tr we didn't we never released it, because we listened back, and it was like the person that was essentially sort of like reporting to, who asked me to do this, functioned as like the executive producer, right? So I recorded that first episode, brought the recording back to her, and she was like, we can't release this. Like, nobody's gonna, like, if this is
Oh
episode
no.
one, nobody's gonna re listen to episode
Oh.
two. So
Ah.
she kind of like, in a really sort of in a kind way, her name's Danny Oliver. Danny really sort of like coached me and said, in a nutshell, she was like, you have a personality, just like use your personality and do a little homework on the person you're talking to, and let's really at the begin at our in our first few episodes, let's really curate who you're talking to based on people you might already know a little bit. So my very next conversation was with a playwright named Madhuri Shekhar, who was a year ahead of me in grad school at the University of Southern California. And Madhuri and I had a history. We knew each other for a few years. We sat in the recording studio, and it was like magic. It was super like casual, conversational, like high energy. The conversation just rolled nonstop for an hour straight. And it was like, okay, we listened back and we're like, okay, that's what you need to capture. Two playwrights having coffee together is the vibe. And the next three or four episodes from there were very carefully curated, so I could get, the sort of like muscle memory of how to do this. We
When
just
you
built.
say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but when you say curated, do you mean you researched or you spoke with them before? What do you
I
mean?
picked people that I knew.
I see. Oh, curated. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, like the
Yeah.
second episode was a playwright named Luis Alfaro, who was my grad school mentor. We had known each other for a few years. We were very close. And then I talked to Meg Maroshnik and Joy Meads, who launched this organization called the Kilroys.
Sure.
The original days of the Kilroys, they were part of that. And I had known them. And then a playwright named Jen Haley, who wrote The Nether, which is this
Yeah.
amazing,
Sure.
incredible play.
Is it the Royal Court?
Yeah, it was one of the best plays I've ever seen. And I was part of Jen's playwright group, so I had a relationship with her. So this was sort of like having conversations that I didn't have to start from scratch with folks.
Gotcha. But then, so how did that help you develop into the kind of interviewer? And I kind of almost hate, I hate, almost hate the word interviewer. It's like, it's so
Oh yeah,
strange, right?
I abhor it, even though I use it. I am not a
But
fan
that's
of it
what,
because over the years I've been seen as a journalist, and
Right.
I'm not a
It's a
journalist,
dirty word now.
but people have come to me as a journalist, as if I am a journalist, to like promote a thing. Like I,
Sure.
and, but the thing is, I'm primarily a playwright. So what has happened over the years is I will say, submit a play to a theater, get rejected, and then their PR department sends me an email and says, hey, will you promote, right, the thing that we accepted? And over the years, I've been very, very cranky about, like, I have responded to some of these emails in an unkind way because they would catch me at a moment of like deep insecurity. So it's really sort of like me figuring out what my, you know, when you're a writer, you're figuring out your voice. Like, what do you write about? What moves you to write? How do you write? It was the same kind of thing with how do I talk to people on the microphones for this podcast? What's sort of my brand for the subtext? What will people expect? And I developed that over these first, you know, 5 or 6 episodes that I recorded. And I came to find that there's a very fine line between research and too much research, because when I was too researched, I was too prepped and simply waiting for the thing. I'm like, okay, now I need to ask this. But I found if I just put less preparation into my brain, I could let the conversations go organically. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing my active listening, if I'm really paying attention, and just following my own instincts, then we're going to have a good conversation because I look at it as like, I'm getting to know you and I'm very interested in the listeners. I'm the avatar for the listeners. So I'm getting to know you and I'm following my, whatever is moving me, about your story as a writer. And that's kind of like the vibe that each episode has now.
Well, and I'm not going to, diminish. Listen, what I'm going to tell you is, because I'm a fellow playwright, podcaster, congratulations, because people give up, especially both, but you know, I think you can be both. And I think it can exist in your own terms. Doing a pure interview show for how many years? 10?
10 and a half now. Yeah.
10 and a half. That's no small feat. And what I'm saying to you is that, like, I would not diminish that accomplishment. It's this world kind of like, I don't know, it treats it like it's like your first day, where it's like, oh, it's easy. Anybody could do it. Well, here, I'm going to tell you, in radio land here, in podcast land, go and try it.
Yeah.
Go try it. See how long you last.
Yeah, there's that statistic that's like 80 to 90% of podcasts don't make it past the first episode.
Right.
Right. And I think a big reason why I keep going is because I'm the entire thing. So like, I don't have to schedule with a partner, because you have partners, and it can, like, sometimes you've got to postpone because both people, like, multiple people aren't available. It's just me. Mm-hmm. So I just need to want to keep going for it to keep going. And I've been on this roller coaster with this thing over the years, because it essentially started when my playwriting career really started, which was the completion of grad school. So it was like, I complete grad school, have my MFA, hitting the ground running as a writer, start a podcast. The podcast became more, I don't know, popular or better known than my playwriting. So for my first few years, it was really like a battle against that. Like Brian's the podcaster. And I'm like, no, Brian's the playwright. And I thought of quitting many, many times because it was so painful. Like, getting those emails, getting the rejection, but also the invitation, rejection from one door and an invitation into the other door. So painful.
That is so wickedly rude, but I understand why they would do it. Mari, I can see you have something.
Oh, I just can't believe that happened to you. I mean, I can totally believe it, but it's
just so,
they thought you wouldn't notice or something.
Yeah, that's so difficult, because I think that has maybe something to do with like the weird kind of diminishment that the American theater feels. And it's like, oh, this guy's broadcasting. Why does he want to have his play on at our little place? Do you know? Yeah, Mari.
Well, and I mean, I think that that just has to do with the fact that there is so little writing about theater and so little theater criticism that really breaks through. I mean, the fact that American Theater Magazine really is like, it's not the only magazine, but like, really, it's the only one. And it's like, there isn't only one literary magazine, there isn't only one art magazine. So, you know, if there's something successful, it's the only thing, because there really just isn't as much talk about theater, just especially online, as there are other art forms. So
But
I get
just the
it, but.
but it's also like that kind of like, oh, we're all in this together. Why wouldn't you promote this play that we picked over yours? I mean, and yeah, Brian, that puts you in a really difficult position.
Oh, so difficult. And I keep saying how insecure I am. It's been a journey over the years. And like I said before, I thought of quitting multiple times because I'm like, why do I keep doing this to myself? Where I'm talking to this playwright who has just done so well, and I'm just struggling month after month. And then I interviewed, two things happened that really just changed everything. And they were kind of years apart. But several years ago, I interviewed a playwright named Paula Vogel, Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, How I Learned to
How to Learn
Drive,
to Drive, an incredible play.
playwright hero, absolute hero. And I had this conversation, I had this amazing conversation with her, one of my favorite episodes I ever recorded. And at the end of it, we were talking, and I can't remember if this was on the mic or off the mic, but in the room, just the two of us talking, and I was sharing this part of me with her that this has been very hard for me as a playwright, doing this month after month, and I'm thinking about stopping. And she said, "What you're doing is something for the community." And I was just like, oh, I never really thought of that because I'm just like so self-absorbed. I'm like, this is for me, that I'm doing it for me, right?
A self-absorbed playwright.
Right. And she was like, it's kind of a gift for the community that you're doing this month after month. And I was like, oh, wow. And then the other thing she said was, playwrights don't get to be engaged constantly. There are humongous lulls. Right? Like you're writing a play, you may have a play production happening in 9 months. And in the meantime, you're lucky if anybody's talking to you, right? Like you're just on your own in your silo. And she said, but not you, Brian. You every single month get to do something. And I was like, wow, she completely flipped around my perspective. And I was just like, that's amazing. After that, I was like, okay, I'm going. And a few years passed, and I started to think, what's the end game for this? It's like, when do I wrap this up? I joke that my vision statement for the subtext is, I will interview every playwright that exists, right? So when that happens, then I'm done. And that's impossible because every year there's like 100 more that
Yeah,
keep,
there's 100 more damaged people.
right. But as I'm thinking about like, do I continue? How long do I continue? What do I do? I got contacted out of the blue by an artistic director I used to be friends with in Los Angeles, and he quite literally dropped a commission in my lap to write a play about my experiences as a playwright creating this podcast. And I was like, okay, so I guess I can't quit now because I'm now. So I ended up, I'm still working on it, but I've essentially written a memoir play that is about what I've been talking about, my journey trying to be a playwright in the context of doing this podcast, and getting caught in this sort of liminal space between the podcaster and the playwright, and knocking on one door and having the other one open for me, and the struggle of like finding myself and my identity and sort of figuring out what success means in that context.
Right. And if all we do, if all you do is archive this place and this time online, in the American theater for playwrights that is worthy, that's worthy work. So I'm pleased that, you know, pleased you're doing it.
Thank you,
of course. Mari,
do you have any development coming up for that piece before we dive into the piece that people can see?
And sure, yeah, and I want to talk more. Yeah, we want to.
Yeah, not yet. It's the play. It's the title of the play is This Is the Subtext, and it's the play that I'm currently sending around, hoping to like lock into some. It's a semi-finalist for a couple opportunities that are out there. It might only make it that far, like semifinal status, but we'll see. You know, it's the beginning of the year. Hopefully, in a few months, it might have connected somewhere, and I'll be able to develop it.
Well, so let's take that opportunity to move. And I, you know, feel a little guilty now, but let's talk about your work. Why are you a playwright in America in 2026? Why the meeting? What do you hope to see from this?
Well, why a playwright is kind of like because I tried a lot of other things and they just didn't take. I wasn't an artist or artistically engaged growing up. I was just a bad athlete in school, and then I arrive in undergrad and I'm like, okay, well, I don't do sports anymore. What do I do? And I spent 4 years just kind of trying to be a personality, like have a personality and figure out who I am. And by the time I graduate, you know, I'm in my early 20s and I'm like, okay, now what? I don't have any discernible skill. I have a degree in philosophy, which is like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Listen, and we've talked about this again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, the philosophy degree is underrated.
Underrated, but however,
and underpaid.
I was not the right person to have a degree in philosophy. And I just started to, I basically meandered through my 20s, acting, doing theater, just because I was like, here's how I'll meet people. Here's something that can be a hobby. And I just was never any good at it. And then by the time I got to like my early 30s, I just started to write. Like I had started to meet some writers, and because I was acting in theater was the first thing I started to write. And it just like, oh, okay. I like doing this. I have an aptitude for it. During this entire time, I had all these day jobs, all these corporate jobs that, you know, I was good at, but I hated them. They just made me miserable. And then I started to write plays and I'm like, oh, I really like this. It feels good. I feel like I'm communicating with the world. I feel like I'm part of the world. And that's sort of why it stuck with me. Like I was like, I'm a playwright and this is what I'm going to do. And a few years later, I found myself in grad school studying it. And here I am years later.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said something about a meeting there, right? So where does this work live? Like, how did it germinate? How did you end up in to the point of like a workshop? Because I think any playwright knows you can write something and it can never.
Yeah.
Unless there's nepotism or you know, you're in a relationship. So you know. Yeah. So how did this arrive at this point?
So this the play that is titled The Meeting came out of a series of trips I took to Poland. So when I was in grad school, a group of us at USC got connected to a woman who was kind of like a cultural affairs person in Warsaw, and was sort of tasked with spreading Polish theater around the world. And one way she did that was by engaging with theater makers and playwrights all over the world. And I got invited to Poland and really connected with the country. You know, I'm part Polish. My last name means Polish person. And so on my first trip to Poland, I was just like, oh, wow, these are my people. Like, I really see, I could see, I had this moment on a subway car where every person had my grandfather's face. And I was just like, wow. Like I'm like blown away by this. And I just had a very powerful emotional connection to the place. And because of that, I kept getting invited back. Every couple of years, there was another reason to bring me back to work on another project or attend a conference or a festival. And then 2016, the election in 2016 just happened, and I was very unhappy with the results, which is the understatement. And I got invited back to Poland, basically for about a 3-week trip. And the first part of this was a small conference where I was in attendance with about 20 other playwrights and theater directors who were from Central Europe, Eastern Europe, Poland, Ukraine, Lithuania, all these countries. And we talked theater for like 4 or 5 days. And at one point during this conference, we were tasked with going into breakout groups and creating a performance piece to bring back to the conference. So I spent a day with 5 other playwrights, and we did nothing but walk around Wrocław, Poland, and talk and hang out. And at one point, I had to bail because I went to visit a distant cousin of mine. And I'm gone for a couple hours, and I come back, and the rest of our day is them just asking me about, meeting my cousin and what that was like. But we did spend a lot of time talking about what the arts are like in all of these different countries, Belarus being one of them, which is run by a fascist dictator named Lukashenko, who has taken control over the arts. And next thing we know, we've run out of time. We had no time to prepare a performance to bring back to the conference. So what we decided to do was recreate a portion of our conversation. And we said, let's just have this conversation in front of everybody else. And that's what our performance is. And we tried that and it failed. But the idea of it, like, stuck with me. And I came home, years pass, it's now COVID time, and I'm just looking for things to do. And I'm like, oh, that sort of like meta theatrical meeting thing that I did in Poland, I'm gonna write that. So I wrote it, and the play is basically, at the time I wrote it, it was set in a near future fascist United States, where the arts are banned, theater is banned, there are no theaters, there are no museums, there's no music. Theater makers are no longer able to make theater. And my play is essentially saying, this is what happens, this is what theater makers will do in this context. So the characters in the play are 5 former theater makers. And they convene a meeting. So the audience isn't an audience, they're attendees of a meeting. There's no fourth wall. Everybody is in this room. The play is designed to be presented in a space that is not a theater. It's designed to be presented in like a church basement, a bomb shelter, anything like that. Any place that is not a theater, that's where this play can take place. And these 5 former theater makers, there's a director, playwright, actor, stage manager, and music composer. They have an agenda of items to talk about, and they talk about these items, and
And they do anything but make a play. Yeah.
they do anything but make a play because
Or
you
do
can't,
they?
or do they? Or do they? I guess we'll say it that way. And so that's what the meeting has become. And to go back to one of your other questions, like I wrote it and nothing really happened with it. I moved on to other things. And about a year ago, we had another inauguration for the same president who was elected back in 2016, and that same sort of like feeling was in my gut that I had back when I took that first that trip to Poland where I had the idea for this play. And I just wrote about it on Facebook. I wasn't pitching it, but I was just talking about we as artists and the direction our country's going. And I mentioned this play that I had written. And after I wrote that on Facebook, I got a bunch of people emailing me or messaging me through Facebook saying, send me that play, send me that play. And I sent it to this one person I knew in LA who has a theater company called Theater Unleashed. And he immediately programmed it in the Hollywood Fringe Festival last year.
That is the best feeling. The best feeling where you send out. I haven't had that feeling in a long time, Brian. I remember what it feels like, but
the best feeling. And I was like, well, this is perfect because this is a fringe piece. Like, this is basically like.
Right. This isn't going to Broadway. Play. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Until it does.
So they produced it. And for anybody that's been involved in a fringe show before, it's just like when you do fringe, you're like fly by night, getting time to rehearse whenever you can get time to rehearse. You're just throwing it together and doing your best. So I wasn't really part of this process like a playwright normally would be for the first production. They just kind of did it. But the play had no readings, had no workshops. I wrote it and I revised it once and then they produced it. And I was like, I don't even, like, this is a high concept piece. I don't even know that it works. And I showed up in LA for one of the performances and I was just like, oh, okay. The play has legs. It works. Like, the audience is invested. They understand what the rules of the world are. And it's not a great play. Like, I sat there thinking, you know, this isn't a great play, but I think it can be a good play. Mm. And I kept looking for
it
opportunities.
It could be a great, great play. Listen.
Perhaps. Yeah.
One day. And for people who are not playwrights, that's just, it's just not done. Not in a serious way. I mean, you just don't take a script and slap it in front of an audience who are paying. And you say, this is, yeah. No, it's just not done.
But Greg Crafts, who runs Theater Unleashed, he saw the potential in this play. He believed in it and he made it happen. And it really did work. The performance I saw was in June of 2025, and it was No King's Day.
Let me just pause again. I don't mean that it's not done. I just mean from a playwright's perspective, that's not the finished thing.
For sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No King's Day. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was No King's Day. And I bring that up because it's very relevant to what's happening now. Like, the temperature of the city of LA was, you know, elevated. The energy was palpable, and that energy was in the room during the performance of this play.
Well, maybe you'll have a similar thing here in the Twin Cities right now.
Yes.
And yeah. See, we talk about this all the time, that it's very scary how writing a play is like a version of magic. Not saying that you manifested all of the horrible things that are happening, but there's some kind of energy swirling around in the air where things always find their perfect time and some kind of weird synchronicity happens.
Yeah.
You gotta be careful when you write stuff.
I know. And it is because I really did. I wrote it as a warning. I was like, listen, I want this to be for people to sit in. I want people to sit in this space and be like, we don't want to slide into this level of fascism. And we've been in rehearsals for the past couple of weeks here in Minneapolis as our government has invaded our country. And each night in rehearsal is like, we need to take time at the beginning of every rehearsal because it's just, everybody is feeling so heavy because of what our day-to-day life is like. And then we're about to, you know, dig into this material that is essentially not so distant future. And it's been real, like, like it's way closer to home than I ever imagined when I wrote it. I was not saying, I definitely was not like, we're gonna go here. I was like, this could happen. It probably won't, but it could. And so let's think about that. And now it's like it can.
Let's come down to the granular level here. So we're talking about January 2026 in the Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. And you're talking about ICE, you're talking about, the federal government essentially occupying a great American city, or a once great American city, depending on your perspective. And you're talking about kind of what the why bother of the arts, the why, if this is if the this is like a half a point, half a question, which I know is a violation of the interviewer's ethic, right? But it's like, if the political theater is greater than the stage theater, why are we not in politics? Why are we making our little plays? Is that kind of the what you're talking about, or am I speculating?
I hadn't actually thought of it from the angle that you said, but in the play itself, these five people are really questioning what the point of their existence is if they can't do what it is in their nature to do. And this is what they're chewing on. They're chewing on what is the value of art. What is the value of our lives? What do we do with ourselves? How are we connected to each other now if this is removed from life? And these are the big questions that they're sort of like dealing with in the play.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, the workshop. So hit your plug again, because we're going to be on the radio and online. Where can
Right, so
people?
yeah, the play is called The Meeting, and it's being presented by Melancholics Anonymous at the Black Forest Inn in Minneapolis on January 30th at 7 p.m. And I think you could just show up. I think it's free, and you can just show up.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting time to be making theater. I mean, you think about Vaclav Havel and like, what are we doing? Okay, so I just, yeah, that just sounds riveting. Is there any other, like, how to say this? When you were writing the work, were you referring to other pieces? I mean, is there something that, like, you said, oh, this is like, my dinner with Andre, or like what were the sort of sources, the anxiety of influence, Brian?
Yeah, so the original sources were when I keep referring back to this Poland trip in 2016. After this conference, I went from Wrocław, Poland to Krakow, Poland, and I was in Krakow for like 12 days or so during a theater festival. It's called the Komedia Boska Festival, and it's major European theater festival. And so theater companies from all over Europe are presenting shows, and they are all like highly imaginative, director driven, wildly theatrical plays. And so I spent 12 days, I saw maybe 30 productions, and some of them were really super, like not even site specific, but like not specifically in like a traditional theater. And the way places were transformed into theater spaces really opened my mind up to what a play can be. And so I came away from that very inspired to create to just brought not create specifically site-specific plays, but just like open my mind up to what theater space is and where a play can be presented. And that was a huge influence. And then I'm kind of I'm influenced by everything that I take in. And not to get too meta with you, but I just spent the past week listening to the Samuel Beckett episode of Art of Darkness, And for those of you out there
You gotta come on.
who
Yeah,
are
go on.
like, for those of you out there who are like, it took you an entire week to listen to an episode of a podcast, listen, it was 5.5 hours long. I took it in bites because that's a, it was a, but it was a long slog. But for I took so many notes to myself while listening to this because there was so much about Beckett I didn't know, and Beckett's influences, and a lot of Beckett's writing and his novel writing, which I knew nothing about.
Oh God. I mean, I'm sorry, but there are people who only know Beckett through the novels, right?
Which is
Yeah.
wild to me. I'm like, he wrote
Right.
novels? What?
Same. Yeah.
And so when I'm constantly working on something, and oftentimes I'm working on multiple things at the same time. I am like taking in things in our culture, in my life, all the time. I'm walking my dog, and I'm listening to something, and sometimes it's music, and I'll just hear like a turn of phrase or a lyric, and I'm like, oh, that's really interesting, and I'll note it, and I'll note what it makes me think of. So for the meeting, there was no one specific thing, but I've just been constantly influenced by the things that I am taking in. And then during the workshop, the best thing about the workshop for me is listening to sort of open general conversation with the cast, who are all super smart. The way actors get to speak from within a singular character, because that's their job, is so interesting and useful to me as a playwright, to have an actor be like, well, actually, like I was thinking about, how they're motivated to do this or not do. And then the way the conversation just goes into out of the play and into the world that we're living in, and then back into the play. I find like so many surprise inspirations having these conversations.
Yeah. I just wanna, we have maybe what, 5 more minutes. I think, we've been kind of talking around what's going on here in Minnesota, but I think we're living in a world historical moment. This is a place that's very dear to my heart. I migrated here when I was 17. I've married two Minnesotans. That's the last one. Just this morning, our car wouldn't start, right? The wagon wouldn't start. And so I had the mechanic come by, and out comes my wife. I mean, to be clear, it's like negative what right now? -8. And she just walks out in her sweats and her shirt, and she looks at me, I look at her, and I go, honey, are you all right? She goes, it ain't nothing. It's nothing. So, I mean, this is a place that's dear to me. And I just said, oh, I love this woman. But what do you, in 5 minutes, Brian, what do you think this moment means? I mean, I have theories, I'm not going to pontificate it, but maybe we can talk about the meeting with Melancholics Anonymous in the context of what's going on right now with this business of the federal government coming in and essentially conducting raids to eject non-citizens, right? What are your feelings? Really?
Like I was mentioning before, every rehearsal started with spending a couple minutes talking about like answering this question that you just asked me. And each night it's been a combination of like fear and inspiration every day. I am scared of what can happen next, and I'm unbelievably inspired by the way people in this community have come together to say no. And that has been so moving. And it connects directly, there's a direct line right into the play from there, because that is exactly what's happening in this play. These people exist in a world where they're not allowed to do something, and they say no. And they basically do what they can in the face of fascism. And I guess this is like I'm inspired by the world around me, and that is very much feeding what's happening in my play, and I am just realizing it as I'm saying this.
Can I say, just volunteer, that living through this right now, I have my politics. They're not perfectly formed. I mean, if you have perfectly formed politics, you're an ideologue, and you're going to have trouble in America, anywhere really, unless you become the fascist or the dictator. Doesn't matter left or right, you can be a dictator from either side, from any side. What I'm shocked about is just how many stories are happening all at once in Minnesota. You have the fraud, you have the immigration, you have this kind of leftist invasion of a church during a service, and now that's become a story. It's just like one story after another. And as an observer, you can't, it's like Rashomon, you can't get to the bottom of like what's happening at any given moment. And that's what makes a good play in many cases. A bad play tells you what's happening beat by beat, and that's for children. So I just think that I think it's so interesting, and I think it's interesting that it's happening right now in Minnesota, which is kind of the third mall from the sun, the place where everybody kind of wants to just. It's the Minnesota's defined for better or worse by the mall, by the suburbs. I mean, we have the art scene. We had Prince. We have Prince. We'll always have Prince. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like it's a place where you're just kind of like, I don't know. Like, why isn't this happening in New York? Why is this happening to us? Do you feel any of that, Brian, as a fellow transplant?
I mean, I moved here 1.5 years ago,
Oh my
and
God.
I immediately,
Welcome to the party.
I but I immediately fell in love with this place.
It's a great place.
I love living here and hope that I'm here for the rest of my life, and I really mean that. It is warm, it is welcoming, it is joyful. It is, I find it to be like the antithesis of the way it's being projected in the media. So I'm kind of upset by the way people now think Minneapolis, a lot of people think Minneapolis is, their opinion is based on riots, like what happened in 2020 with following George Floyd's murder. And they, like, the media is showing, these raids, and us, they're like the people fighting back as if that's why things are getting bad, and it just makes me sad because this is such a wonderful place and I'm just so happy to be here. And one version of this is it goes away in a week, and another version of this
This
is
is not gonna.
it just escalates and gets worse, and I don't know where we're at right now.
Mean, we can talk about it more another time. We have to wind this down. I didn't mean to end on a down note, but we do come out on the radio here in the Twin Cities, and I just wanted to give us a moment of sort of talking about the immediacy of it. But I share your sadness. It's sad, and the story is also about media. It's also about the way things are presented. But that's a conversation for another day. Brian James did I get it right?
Polak.
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 Okay, I want to get it right. Give your pitch again. Tell us about your play first, and then the podcast that you do, and
Yes.
we'll get out of here.
Come to the meeting, attend the meeting. Presented by Melancholics Anonymous at the Black Forest Inn on January 30th at 7. And if you're interested in hearing my voice more, talking to other playwrights, the name of my podcast is The Subtext, and it's presented by American Theatre Magazine. You can find it wherever you find podcasts.
And you're going to come on Art of Darkness at artofdarkpod.com and talk about Beckett later this year. If you, I'm sending you the booking link, and if you don't reply, I don't know. We're gonna have to have another meeting.
Okay, we'll
All
do
right.
it. We'll do it.
Peace. All right. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mari.
Thank you.
Thank
Take care,
you.
everyone.